Let's talk finance. Wouldn't it be convenient to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one spot? Yahoo Finance does just that. It consolidates your portfolio views and offers expert analysis, making it easier to manage your investments. Let's not beat around the bush. You want to grow your portfolio, fight inflation, pay off debts, and achieve financial freedom. Yahoo Finance provides the news, data, and tools to make that happen. You may think you've covered all the bases, savings, researching, and investing smartly. But to truly excel, you need Yahoo Finance in your corner. A holistic perspective is crucial for success, and Yahoo Finance ensures you have it. With a massive community of over 90 million users monthly, Yahoo Finance is here to guide you on your path to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. We all make mistakes, decisions that we regret, things we'd like to do over, like not buying Bitcoin when you first heard about it at $1. We all carry around different stresses, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. At times, therapy has helped me and my loved ones in many ways. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major traumas. With the right guide, you can discover effective strategies to minimize distractions and truly connect with your needs, setting the stage for a more balanced life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched up with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit BetterHelp.com/gold today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/gold.
The Peter Schiff Show.
The Dow ended a very volatile week with a record-breaking point gain, 1,985 points, almost 2,000 point move in the Dow. That is an all-time record for point gains. I think percentage-wise, the 9.36% gain is in the top 10. And of course, most of the other days where you had moves anywhere close to this size was in the protracted bear market during the 1930s. Of course, even despite this 1,985-point rally, we were still down better than 2,600 points on the week. But a lot of stuff that happened this week hadn't happened since the 1920s or 1930s. This was the first week that the Dow had a 4% move in either direction every day of the week since November of 1929, and that was during the stock market crash. And the last time the Dow had 2 days where the market moved by 9% back to back, and that's what we had yesterday and today, that hadn't happened since October of 1929. Now, the catalyst for the rally was a speech, right, given by President Trump in the final hour. Going into the final hour, I think we were only up about maybe 400, 500, 600 points. I forget. It was a pretty volatile day. In fact, the Dow Jones opened almost 1,000 points higher and then sold off. And at the low point, it was only up about 200. The Russell 2000, which, by the way, significantly lagged on the upside, it was the only major index that wasn't up more than 9%. It was up 7.77%. But it actually went negative by about 1.5-2%. It gapped way up and sold off negative, and then it was able to recover. But the real catalyst was the explosive rally in really the final half hour, because Donald Trump was supposed to start talking at 3 o'clock, and he didn't really start until around 3:30. And that's when we had this face-ripping, short-covering rally into the close, because Trump announced the beginning of the national bailout for the coronavirus. And he started by declaring a national state of emergency. So it's not that there's just one area of the country that has an emergency. The entire nation is an emergency zone. And so the entire nation is now eligible
for federal bailout money. Of course, the problem is the federal government doesn't have any money to bail anybody out because the federal government is broke, right? The federal government is already running record budget deficits, which are about to get so much bigger, we're going to shatter those records because we are now going into a recession. If not, we're probably already in one. We'll know when we get the final numbers. But the whole country is pretty much shutting down, right? Not because of the coronavirus, but for fears of people getting the coronavirus. Or as I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, I think it has to do with litigation. I think that especially now that it's a national emergency, and once so many companies start shutting down, I think there's so much pressure on the other companies to shut down too, because if they don't, and then one of their employees catches the coronavirus, the lawsuit is going to be, well, you should have shut down. It was irresponsible for you to require me to show up, and you subjected me to this disease. And this is going on. You know, I mentioned that I first heard about the legal angle regarding a private school in New York that shut down. Well, now, not only is my son Spencer's school in Connecticut shut down, and he goes to a public school, but they shut down all over Connecticut, all over Fairfield County. But I just found out today that my younger kids here in Puerto Rico, and they're at a private school, their school is shut down too. So schools are shutting down all over the country. Businesses are shutting down. And so clearly, you know, the economic activity is going to grind to a halt in a lot of areas of the U.S. economy. So clearly, we are in a recession. So tax revenues are going to go down, right? And so the government's going to have even bigger deficits. So where is the money going to come from? Trump said one of the reasons that he's declaring the country a state of emergency is because that frees up all kinds of money to spend. What money? The government doesn't have any money locked away somewhere to spend it. Where's that money going to come from? It's going to come from the massive quantitative easing program that the Federal Reserve just announced yesterday. In fact, the only reason that the market wasn't down much more this week than it was because of the dual bailouts. You have the Federal Reserve coming in with massive monetary stimulus, enabling the government itself to come in with massive fiscal stimulus, which is only possible because of the massive monetary stimulus that is going to be financing it. Now, some of the specifics that President Trump mentioned as recipients of the bailout, number one, were students, right? What the president said was he is going to suspend interest payments on all the government student loans, which now the majority of these loans are government loans. I think it's either government direct issued or I don't know if it's just all the government guaranteed loans, but most of the loans now are actually owned by the U.S. government. And so the U.S. government is now, according to Trump, there's going to be a moratorium on interest payments. And of course, this is open-ended. He didn't say for how long. He's just saying there's no interest payments. Now, he didn't say that you don't have to make your principal payments, but all these student loans, any student could call up and ask to forbear, to put their student loan payments. If they fall on hard times, they can ask for the payments to be forborne for a period of time. Now, under normal circumstances, if you choose not to make any payments on your loan during the time that you're not making payments, you're still accruing interest on the unpaid loan balance. But now the president is saying there's going to be no interest on any of the balance. So there is no penalty to anybody for just not paying their student loans. They could just call up and put their loan in deferment, and there's no cost to that. That means everybody who has a student loan, even if you can afford to make the payments, why wouldn't you just put it into deferment? Why not get an interest-free loan from the U.S. government? I mean, you'd have to be an idiot to turn it down, right? So basically, everybody who is currently making student loan payments to the U.S. government is going to stop, because why make the payments if you could just make the payments later and pay no interest between now and then? And of course, why make payments on your loans if your loan might end up being forgiven anyway? I mean, what if Joe Biden wins, and he's probably going to win? And there could be some type of student loan forgiveness program under Biden, right? So why not stop making your payments now, right? You're not going to have any interest payments on your loans. So what the hell? It doesn't cost you anything. So stop making your payments and then see what happens with the election. Because then if the student loans get forgiven, well, then you've saved money. Why make payments now on a loan that's going to get forgiven later, especially if there's no penalty for you to stop making your payments? So that's what's going to happen. So now where is the government going to get all this revenue, right? Because the government is going to stop collecting all those student loan payments. I'm not really sure how much it is, but we have like 1.6, 1.7 trillion in outstanding student loans. So it's probably, what, I don't know, it is 100 billion, 200 billion a year. What are they collecting in interest and principal payments on these loans? So all that's going to stop. So where's the government going to get the money? Because the government spending isn't going to stop. The government spending is going to go up. So how are we going to replace all that lost revenue that the government is no longer collecting? Well, the Fed, right? The Fed's just going to print all the money to buy up all these student loans. So it's QE for students, right? Instead of just a bailout for the banks, this is a bailout for people with student loans. We're just going to have the Fed print money and supply it to the government instead of the loan payments that are currently being paid. Now, here is the problem with this. You know, once you open up this door, once you tell all the students, hey, you don't have to make any loan payments, which in effect, that's exactly what Donald Trump is doing. Now people stop making payments on their loans and now they have more money to spend and they find out, you know, ways of spending it, right? The minute you have more money, I don't think the people who stop making their student loan payments are going to take the money that they otherwise would have used to pay their loans and put it in some kind of savings account somewhere, you know, for the future. No, they're just going to start spending the extra money that they're not paying, making loan payments. They'll use it for food. They'll use it for, you know, entertainment or rent or whatever, medical care, whatever the money is there, it's all going to be spent. And of course, what's going to happen is during this time period where nobody is making any loan payments, their overhead, right, their monthly nut is likely to rise a bit because they now have a little bit more money. Now, maybe some people will lose their jobs, and so they won't have more money, but whatever money they're getting, they're going to start spending it. Here's going to be the political problem. Once you stop the payments, how do you start them back up again? How do you tell a bunch of people who have gotten used to making no payments on their student loans, oh, now you got to start paying these loans? Because the minute you do that, right now, all of a sudden, consumer spending collapses because people who got used to spending all that money, now they have to send it to the government. It's really like a massive tax cut. And since this recession is going to be very long, I mean, Biden is going to inherit a recession from Trump. And I think the recession is going to span the entirety of the Biden administration. So how are they going to basically effectively impose a tax increase on all these people who have student loans during a recession? They're not going to do it. So basically what we're really having here is a backdoor student loan forgiveness program, right? Donald Trump is stealing Bernie Sanders' thunder. He's basically found a way to forgive all the student loans without coming right out and forgiving them. Because he's telling all the students, you can stop making your payments right now and it's going to cost you nothing, so stop paying. And once the payments stop, no politician is going to want to reimpose them, especially during a downturn. So this is it. We've already got student loan forgiveness paid for by permanent QE infinity by the Federal Reserve. But it's not just the students who are getting a bailout. Right. The government is going to try to help bail out the oil companies because Trump said that he has directed the Secretary of the Energy to start buying up oil, massive quantities of oil, and storing it. Now, where is the Secretary of Energy going to get the money? Right. It's not like he's sitting on a pile of money. No, the Federal Reserve is going to supply the pile with its printing press. So now we have QE for the oil company. It's really quantitative greasing is what we've got. We're going to grease the economy literally and figuratively with this quantitative greasing. But how much oil are we going to buy? How much money are we going to print to buy oil? Now, ironically, while I disagree with this, I don't think we should be printing money. I would rather print money to buy oil than to buy Treasury bonds. I mean, I think it's better for the Federal Reserve to create money out of thin air and then use it to actually buy a commodity that we need, right? In fact, if we were ever going to fill our reserves, now is a great time to do it. It's unfortunate that we don't have budget surpluses, and so the government could fill the reserves with its surpluses to have to create money to do it and create inflation. But, you know, if you have Saudi Arabia and Russia, you know, running the pumps overtime and flooding the world with oil, we might as well flood the world with our worthless paper and buy up all that oil. And it kind of takes some of the sting out of what they're doing in trying to drive the price down. Now, I think oil prices were up about $1.50 or so in response to this news. So it didn't really have that big an impact. But again, you know, this is more quantitative easing, more money that the Fed's going to have to print to pay for all the oil that we're going to buy. But then beyond this particular plan, the president really wasn't specific, but he kind of left the door open to bailing out everybody, because somebody asked him specifically about the cruise industry, you know, and the cruise liners and, you know, are we going to bail them out? And Donald Trump didn't say no. He basically said, well, you know, they haven't asked me. He said it's a very important industry. It's a vital industry. And, you know, we need it. And he basically said, well, I haven't bailed them out because they haven't asked me for a bailout, which was almost like extending an open invitation to ask for a bailout. Because pretty much everybody who wants one, I think, is going to get one. I mean, certainly if you're a big company, any airline is going to come and is going to get a bailout, or the hotel chains or the restaurant chains. But of course, you know, if we're going to bail out the big companies who have political clout, what about the mom and pops? What about the small businesses? Why shouldn't they get a bailout, right? If you own a small restaurant, right, and people aren't eating at your restaurant now because they're worried about getting the coronavirus, well, where's your bailout? What happens to you? I mean, just not having to make your student loan payments might not be enough. I mean, you may not have any student loans. You might have been dumb enough to pay off your student loans. Or maybe you were smart enough to not even go to college and just start your own business, right? But who's going to bail you out? Well, I'm sure that the bailouts are coming. We are going to bail out everybody. This is bailout nation. The problem is, we can't bail out everybody, because who's doing the bailing? You know, when you have a small segment of the population that is in trouble and needs a bailout, you can do it because you can tax the rest of the population who doesn't need to be bailed out. And that's how you make it possible. But we can't bail out everybody. I mean, think about, you know, an easy analogy. You know, I use the analogy of people, you know, stranded on an island, like, you know, how an economy grows and why it crashes.
As a public person, I am hyper aware of safety and security. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information you don't want online, and it makes sure it stays offline. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process, helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts will take it from there. Delete Me sends you regular personalized privacy reports showing what information they found, where they found it, and what they removed. Delete Me isn't just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information that you don't want on the internet. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/gold and use the promo code GOLD. Gold at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/gold and enter code GOLD at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/gold, code GOLD. In my early days, I faced a pivotal moment in my career. Instead of following the herd into traditional finance, I charted my own course. Despite skepticism, I founded my investment firm driven by a belief in economic truth and fiscal responsibility. Through perseverance, I established myself as a leading voice in finance, proving that sometimes blazing your own path is the best way to succeed. To get what you want, sometimes you have to challenge the status quo and blaze your own trail. That's what Harry's did. Seeing people tricked by expensive razors, Harry's took a stand. Instead of pricey options, they offer high-quality razors at a fraction of the cost. That's why when it comes to grooming my face, I use Harry's. Harry's understands the value of quality without breaking the bank. Their razors provide a smooth shave every time, and their shaving gel leaves my skin feeling refreshed and moisturized. So don't settle for the status quo. Blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/gold. That's harrys.com/gold for a $3 trial set.
Hopefully this is the last time you hear this ad, because with Chime Checking Account, features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit, you can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade to spend more time listening to your favorite podcasts, or at least grab yourself an extra morning latte this month. Join millions of Chime members who work on their financial progress with fee-free overdraft and no monthly fees. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
But let's say, going back to my analogy, you know, from that book, there was Abel Baker and Charlie were on the island. And every day they went fishing for fish, right? And then eventually, you know, Abel came up with a net, and so they were able to catch more fish. But I'm going to talk about the island before the net was invented. While they're still fishing by hand every day. And in my book, they could only catch one fish a day each. So let's say Charlie gets sick, right? Maybe he caught the coronavirus and now he's in isolation. And he can't fish because he's not feeling well. He needs a bailout. Well, Abel and Baker can say, you know what? We're gonna share our fish with you. We're just going to eat a little less every day, and we're going to give the food that we don't eat to you, and we're going to provide you with a bailout until you get healthy. And that's possible, right? You could do that because you still have two people who can go fish, and they can bail out the guy that can't. But what if all three of them get sick, and they all have got the coronavirus? Nobody can fish. Well, how could they get bailed out? If nobody is fishing, nobody is eating, and so they're all dying. Now, one way they could do it is if, in theory, they had a savings. They had a supply of fish that they had stored some way that wouldn't perish, right? They had a fund, a reserve, with a bunch of fish in case of emergency. So if they all got sick, they can tap into their supply of fish, and there'd be enough fish in there, assuming it hadn't rotted, right? They may have had a way of keeping it fresh. But then they could eat their reserves, right, because they saved. Had they underconsumed in the past? Now, that wasn't really possible before the net. But once, you know, they had a net, you know, and they could, you know, they could have a lot more fish, they could survive because of their capital investment and their savings. But if they don't have any savings, right, they don't have any fish stockpiled, if all three of them aren't fishing, then they're starving. Well, the same is true for the country as a whole, right? The whole country can bail out a small percentage of the country, but how can the country bail out everybody in the country, right? If we all end up not working, right, if none of us go to work, if none of us are providing any services or producing any goods, if we're all hunkered down at home, how are we bailing ourselves out? Where is all the money coming from? You see, if Abel Baker and Charlie, if they didn't have any fish, but somehow they had a printing press, and they just printed up a bunch of money and they gave a little to Abel, a little Baker, a little Charlie. What good is that money? They can't eat that money. There's no real value there. The value is producing. You got to go to the sea and come up with a fish. You have to work to get food that you can eat. Printing money doesn't give you anything you can use. And that's true about the society we have today, that we just can't have the Federal Reserve printing up money to bail out every industry in America, every business in America, right, and expect it to work. We're just printing money. The money that we're printing has to collapse. It has to lose dramatic value. And that's what's going to happen. We're going to have massive inflation. You know, it's actually ironic. In one of his State of the Union addresses, I remember President Trump said, America will never be a socialist nation, except he's making it a socialist nation. His whole speech today was about bringing socialism to America. I mean, who needs Bernie Sanders? We've got Donald Trump. But the surprising aspect of it is nobody has figured this out yet. Nobody can see where this is going. I mean, they know that QE has been started and it's going to be massive and the balance sheet is going to explode, right? But they're not even worried. And they forget that the only reason the dollar didn't crash before, the only reason the price of gold stopped going up, was because the Fed convinced everybody that they were going to shrink their balance sheet back to pre-crisis levels, that they were going to normalize interest rates. Well, everybody should have figured out by now that that's never going to happen, that that is impossible. Because if we couldn't shrink a $4.5 trillion balance sheet, we sure as hell not going to shrink a $10 trillion balance sheet. If we couldn't normalize interest rates when the national debt was $20 trillion, we're not going to be able to do it when it's $30 trillion or $40 trillion or wherever it's going. If you remember when quantitative easing first started, and of course they didn't call it QE1 when they first did it, just like they didn't call World War I until we had World War II. You know, World War I was initially called the war to end all wars because nobody thought there'd be another one. But then when we had World War II, so soon after the war to end all wars, well, then we were able to name World War I World War I. Well, the same thing with QE1. When we first did QE, nobody thought there'd be a QE2. I mean, nobody but me. So it was just called quantitative easing. We didn't call it QE1 until they had to launch QE2, which, of course, I knew was coming. But after QE was initially launched, right, and Ben Bernanke was down on Capitol Hill testifying, there were some Republicans back then who didn't like QE, unlike the current president of the United States, who loves QE. I mean, he didn't like it when he was a candidate for president, but now he's, you know, beating the drums for as much QE as possible, right? But there were some Republicans who didn't like QE because they thought the Fed was monetizing the debt, which exactly what they were doing. But when Ben Bernanke was asked point blank, and I don't remember who the senator or congressman was, I know it was a Republican, said, you're monetizing the debt. This is not a good thing. Ben Bernanke denied that. He says, no, we're not monetizing the debt. He said, monetizing the debt is when a central bank buys government bonds permanently. We're not doing that. This is just an emergency. You see, the bonds that we're buying now as part of this QE program, as soon as the emergency is over, we're going to sell the bonds back into the market. So we're not monetizing the debt. We're just temporarily buying government debt, and we're going to sell the debt when the emergency is over. So you don't have to worry. We're not a banana republic. Now, when he said that, I immediately came out publicly and said he's lying or he's completely incompetent. Because I said, once we go down this, you know, path, there's no turning back. Once the government buys these bonds, they'll never sell them, right? It's like saying, hey, I'm going to start a heroin habit. I'm just going to start taking heroin. And when I become a real addict and I'm high as a kite, I'm just going to quit the habit cold turkey, no problem. And I'm going to feel just as great without doing the heroin, which of course can never happen, right? To the extent that you can actually quit, you're going to go through withdrawal. But of course, most people aren't going to quit because they don't want to go through withdrawal. And that's exactly why the Fed did QE2, QE3, and now they're doing QE4. And why all the bonds that the Fed bought in 2008 temporarily are still on its balance sheet. In fact, the balance sheet is now at a record high. We don't even know how high the record is, but you know, it soared this week, and we'll find out at some point just how many bonds the government bought. But now, 2020, now that the Fed has restarted quantitative easing, nobody is going to believe it's temporary. I mean, if anybody was dumb enough to believe it 12 years ago, they sure as hell aren't going to believe it now. So it is a banana republic. We are monetizing the debt. And the debts that we're about to monetize are going to go through the roof. We're going to be talking about $3, $4, $5 trillion, because the government's going to keep not collecting taxes and then spending more money. You know, I mentioned yesterday on the podcast that Jim Cramer's nutty idea that the government should temporarily suspend all taxation, right? Just let everybody off the hook. All the government is free. But what I forgot to mention is that according to Jim Cramer, The White House is actually considering his suggestion that they're looking over his ideas. This is our economic advisor now, a talk show host, basically, although I guess I'm hosting a podcast, so who am I to talk? But the fact that Jim Cramer is setting our economic policy, that could be even worse than Larry Kudlow doing it. But we all know that the government is going to grant a lot of tax relief to a lot of companies, and they're going to spend a lot more money bailing out others. So spending is going to go up. At the same time, revenues are going to go down. So the budget's deficits are going to explode. That means the national debt is going to explode, and the Fed's balance sheet is going to explode along with it. So how can all this be happening? And the dollar is going up. The dollar had a very strong week this week, one of the strongest weeks in years for the dollar index. And the strong dollar also hurt gold. I mean, gold got clobbered today. Gold was off about $45, but that's following yesterday's big drop. Silver was down more than a buck today. In fact, the gold-silver ratio is 104. That is an all-time record. Silver has never been this cheap in terms of gold in, you know, in modern history. We don't even have a record of when this was true. And, you know, it's not just silver that's falling. All sorts of commodities are plunging in terms of gold, right, which shows massive deflation, which is what you have in a recession where prices are falling in terms of gold. And that's what's happening. And stocks are falling in terms of gold. Even though gold was down this week, if you look at the decline in stocks since this bear market started, stocks are getting a lot cheaper in terms of gold. So everything is coming down. The price of financial assets is coming down in terms of gold. The price of commodities is coming down in terms of gold. So we're having a deflation of a bubble, and gold is becoming more valuable. And this sell-off is a great buying opportunity. As I pointed out on yesterday's podcast, when we had the 2008 financial crisis, gold initially sold off. You know, gold went down over 30%. It went from 1,000 to under 700. Now, the correction we've had so far from 1,700 to the low 1,500s, we closed at 1,529, 1,530-ish, that's about a 10% decline so far from the highs. Now, my thought process is I don't think it's going to go 20% down. So somewhere between down 10% and maybe 15% if we get that low might be about all that we do. Because remember, when the market collapsed in 2008, gold had had a big run from 2001. It was under 300. So it tripled basically from under 300 to 1,000. And then we had a 35% correction from a tripling. This bull market really started in January of 2006, and gold had a 70% move. It didn't triple. It only moved up by 70%. So I would not expect nearly as big a price correction. And if you look at the chart of gold, there is tremendous support for gold technically. So I don't think there's that much downside in the price of gold. But one of the reasons that I think we got this big drop in the price of gold over the last 2 days was because we had a huge backup in interest rates. Yields were surging. In fact, my podcast that I did earlier in the week about the potential popping of the bond bubble is looking more and more accurate. I said that maybe we had a blow-off top on that Monday when the yield on the 10-year Treasury got down to just under 0.4. And the yield on the 30-year was, what, around 0.8 or something like that. Because today, the yield on the 10-year is all the way back up to 0.96. Now, that's still low, but it's a lot higher than 0.4. And in fact, we were above 1% intraday. The 30-year now is back at 1.53. But we got up to about 1.8-ish or something like that. I mean, there was a huge sell-off intraday in the bond market. And if it wasn't for the Federal Reserve, I'm sure that had the Federal Reserve not been buying the hell out of these bonds, right? Because that's when they launched the program. They launched this massive QE program on a day where bonds were getting killed. And it wasn't just treasuries. It was muni bonds. It was corporate bonds. It was a bond bloodbath going on behind the scenes. And the Fed cavalry came to the rescue with this pretty presses a running and bought hundreds and hundreds of billions of bonds. So who knows where the yield might be. Maybe the yield on the 30-year would be back up to 3%. Maybe the 10-year would be at 2. Who knows how high? And what that really shows is that the whole bubble is imploding. This house of cards was tumbling down, and it would have tumbled down had it not been for the Federal Reserve artificially propping it up. But again, these props won't work forever because now even greater imbalances are being built that would require stronger and stronger props, which eventually can never be supplied, and the whole thing comes crashing down. And, you know, the strength in the bond market, the rising long-term bond yields, that's probably one of the reasons that the dollar was so strong. And the strong dollar really hit the safe haven currencies like the yen. The yen was down over 3% today. The Swiss franc got hit hard. And so gold got caught up in that because everything that was perceived as a safe haven really went down today, right? You had gold going down, the yen going down, the franc going down, and treasury bonds going down. So all the safe havens got hit pretty hard today. I might as well mention, too, what happened to Bitcoin, which isn't a safe haven, and actually rallied back a little bit during the day today while all the real safe havens were getting killed. So Bitcoin a little bit correlated with the risk assets. But it wasn't a rally that anybody should be excited about. Because as I am recording this, Bitcoin is about $5,700 a coin, which is lower than it was when I recorded yesterday's podcast. The only reason it's a rally is because a few hours after I finished yesterday's podcast, Bitcoin crashed and it went all the way down to about $3,800, below $4,000. It was above $9,000 last week. So it was down 50, 60% in 1 week. Obviously, right, that isn't even close to being a store of value or a safe haven. So it got crashed. And in fact, a lot of those cryptocurrencies, when I was talking about how much they were down, a lot of these altcoins that were down 25, 30% when I was recording yesterday's podcast. Well, a few hours after that, many of these coins were down 50% apiece on the day. 1 day losing half your market value. So those things got obliterated. And I know, again, a lot of the Bitcoin guys are taking solace in the fact that gold was down, and they think that lets Bitcoin off the hook. But say, hey, everything was down. See, gold was down and Bitcoin was down. There's a big difference to being down 10% from the highs and being down 60%, right? To say you're going to compare yourself to gold or claim to be a safe haven or a store of value. And gold is still positive on the year. Bitcoin is not.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the safe havens getting clobbered, bond yields going up, the dollar going up, that really was a big hammer or 1-2-3 combination that beat up the gold market. But the real casualties were not gold bullion, but the gold mining stocks, which got hit very hard yesterday on the close. And I talked about the big drop that we had, particularly in the smaller, less liquid names that would be in the GDXJ, which is a junior mining index. Well, that index actually gapped up maybe about 10% this morning because it had been so beaten down on the close yesterday that it gapped way up. You know, it was actually up more than the market percentage-wise, the stock market. But then it gradually sold off. And, you know, by the last hour, by the time Trump gave his speech, I think it was only slightly positive. But then the market started to roll over. And probably by about 10 minutes before the end of the day, the GDXJ was down about 23, 24%, maybe 25, I forget the exact percentage. And the GDX as well was down almost as much. There was an avalanche of selling that took place in the final half hour of the day. You know, and it was just get me out at any price. And it was just a complete collapse until the final few minutes because the GDXJ only closed down 10%. So it recovered more than half its losses in the final trades, which did at least show me that there was some bargain hunting. At the end of the day, there was some money that was there waiting to buy up some of these ridiculous bargains, my own included. I bought into the close and I put more money into my fund again today. As I've been saying, I've pretty much been buying almost every day on the way down, just taking advantage of this opportunity. You know, that's what people should do, because if you don't take advantage of the opportunity takes advantage of you. And that's what's happening to a lot of people. But I've got a lot of emails from people kind of asking me for what is the explanation? Why is this happening? Why are gold stocks collapsing? Well, I touched on it yesterday. One of the reasons is that gold didn't have a big rally, you know, as a result of this crisis. Of course, it had rallied for the last, you know, couple of years before the crisis, right? Just like it did going into 2008. And there were a lot of people like me that expected that when the Fed was slashing interest rates and going back to QE and going into a recession, things that I knew were going to happen, but things that surprised the hell out of just about everybody else. So when all the things that I knew were going to happen happened, it was natural for me to assume that gold would go up, right? Because I didn't think anybody else knew this stuff. I thought, well, they would be buying gold if they did. But despite the fact that all this stuff happened, people still don't get it. People still don't understand the nature of the problem. I think they're still focusing on the pin, the coronavirus, and not the bubble that the pin pricked. And so they still are minimizing the effects on the economy and the vulnerability of the economy. And they still don't really get where we're going with quantitative easing and the budget deficits and the Biden administration. And so the initial reaction after gold didn't skyrocket, right? Because the crisis started, stocks started tanking long before the gold stocks really started tanking. But once gold didn't take off and then started to have these bigger drops, these 3-4% drops, right? The gold stocks started to sell off. But what I think caused the big decline both yesterday and today, and the reason that I think the declines happened late in the day rather than early, is this is what I'm thinking was happening. I think that people wanted to sell their stocks, right? People were calling up their brokers and putting in orders, or people were putting in limit orders earlier in the day. They wanted to get out, but they just didn't want to hit the bid. But so they put in an order, and they put a limit price in, and they weren't getting filled, and the market was moving against them. And maybe some other clients called their brokers, and they said, look, I want to be out by the end of the day, but they gave the broker some price discretion to try to get a good price. And since the market started high, maybe they put some higher limits, and then the market kept moving away, and maybe they were moving their limits down, but you know, they had the entire day, so they weren't just hitting the bid. They were trying to get a better print. Maybe that's also happening with mutual funds who are getting a lot of redemptions. Maybe the fund companies were like, well, I don't want to sell right here. Let me get a little bounce back. You know, some people might have had margin calls and they might have thought, well, you know, I have to be out by the end of the day, but, you know, let me see. Maybe if it turns around, I won't be on call. Maybe I won't have to send more money or I won't have to sell my stocks. Let me just see how it plays out. You know, maybe we'll have a big rally today. So I think earlier on the day, people are hoping to get better prices. They're hoping for a rally. And maybe also, you know, you have all these ETFs, these exchange traded funds, like I talk about the GDX and the GDXJ. And so they may have had some direct redemptions that required that they liquidate some of their holdings. And again, I think maybe the guys who are liquidating them were holding off on the orders, hoping to get better prices. And then what happens is in the last hour, last half hour, and you still haven't been filled, but you need to get out that day because you run a fund and you've got redemptions or you have a margin call and you got to be out that day. And people didn't want to be long over the weekend. Now, there might have been some day traders too that got in earlier in the day, got on the long side. Maybe they bought the dip or they were hoping that we'd have a rally today after the big sell-off yesterday. And so you had some people who were day trading who had to be out by the close. And once it started to collapse, well, they had no choice but to sell at the market because that was the only way to get out. And so all of a sudden, these limit orders all were market. And then there was probably market on close orders. So I just think you had this huge imbalance into a market that is not very liquid. There's not that many people who are buying gold stocks compared to people buying tech stocks or all kinds of other stocks that more and more people are interested in buying. And I think the same thing yesterday, too. And I think even yesterday's last minute collapse got people thinking that maybe it would happen again. And maybe it even became a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy that it happened again. But I think there were some people who were prepared for it. That's why I think that buying came in the final minute or two of trading, because maybe some people were seeing if it would get a collapse. And so they didn't buy. They were waiting for the close, right? They were thinking, hey, I want to buy some gold stocks. But, you know, yesterday they really got killed on the close. So I'm going to hold off, right? I'm going to try to buy the close. And so buying that might have been taking place earlier in the day, those orders weren't there, which is why we had this big sell-off. But now all of a sudden, everybody that was holding off on buying all at once rushes in to buy the close. And all of a sudden, it goes from down 22% to down 10% because you had these market on close orders from people who thought they were going to buy the low. Just like yesterday, they end up, you know, buying well off the low. But look, I know it's very disheartening to watch this. I mean, people who have been buying gold stocks, you know, it's like everything is happening that we have thought was going to happen. Yet now we're losing money, right? We're not making money because our gold stocks are going down. But what's really happened is we've been given the opportunity to make even more money because we know that these stocks are going to go up, just like they went up from 2009 through 2011, right? Once the Fed really started going with the QE program and the bailouts, right? Once all that happened, the dollar started tanking, gold started soaring, and gold stocks went ballistic. The same thing is going to happen again this time, except it's going to be a much bigger move because there's no way to turn it off. There's no way for the Fed to stop it because this is QE infinity and nobody is going to believe it's anything other than QE infinity. So I just think, you know, it's just an opportunity. And I know at our own mutual fund, I mean, we've actually had net inflows during the week. So, you know, that's great. My clients are not panicking. They're not selling into this vacuum. But clearly, that's not what's happening with other people. And, you know, there may be other people that bought into the gold market that don't necessarily have the conviction to ride this out or don't really understand. Maybe they just jumped on board because it was going up and they really didn't know any better. Remember, you know, you had Cramer was on CNBC recommending some gold stocks. And so maybe people just took his advice and bought. And then when they went down, they just bailed out. I mean, who knows? There was a lot of things that could explain this. But what I do know for a fact is that the fundamentals for the gold mining industry have probably never been better. The fundamentals for gold bullion have certainly never been better. So to me, the opportunity to buy these stocks, a lot of these stocks now are trading at where they were back in December of 2015, January of 2016, at the end of the bear market, before this bull market began, when gold was bottoming out just over 1,000. We're still, you know, above 1,500. So we've had better than a 50% rise in the price of gold over those 4+ years. And now we could buy gold stocks as if none of that increase had ever happened. And of course, back then, did people realize that goal would be 1,500 4 years later? No. When goal was 1,050 back at the end of 2015, everybody thought gold prices were going to 800, 700. I remember because I was buying stocks back then thinking that they were nuts, that gold was going to go higher. So when gold was at 1,000 headed to 800, 700, many gold stocks were more expensive than they are right now. That tells you how cheap they are and how quickly this sale is going to end once the panic sellers have been flushed out.
Anyway, a final thought, though, is I want to talk a little bit about the coronavirus itself, because I know a lot of people, you know, think maybe I'm minimizing the actual, you know, health problems of the coronavirus. And I don't know. I mean, I read a lot of things about the coronavirus that in a way, you know, maybe the threat is actually as great as everybody says. But I tend to think that it's being exaggerated, not only here, but all around the world. I mean, certainly you can err on the side of caution, right? Because of all, you know, we don't know how bad it could be. So we can all just take precautions. And especially, again, with the litigious nature of society, I think we're going to end up taking a lot of precautions that we probably otherwise would not make. Now, whether that ends up being a good thing or a complete waste, I mean, I happen to think it's probably more the latter. I mean, do we really need to give all the teachers a free vacation? I mean, are kids really going to get the coronavirus? I mean, if kids get it, nothing really happens to them, right? If you look at all of the data so far, look at countries like Italy, right, where, you know, you have a lot of cases. And if young people get it, nobody dies. I mean, some of them barely get sick. Now, I know, well, maybe the kid could give it to his grandparent, right? And they have a much better chance of dying from this disease, right? I mean, if you look at the mortality levels, right, it's very, very minimal. Even people up to 50, I mean, the death rate is tiny. It's only when you get above 80, right, that you have a real significant percentage where it's a lot deadlier than the flu, you know, when you're 80 or older. But, you know, it's very difficult. If you're saying, look, a lot of 80-year-olds are dying, yeah, a lot of 80-year-olds die. I mean, that's when most of us die. If we're lucky, we live into our 80s. In fact, I looked up just for, you know, the hell of it, for the life expectancy for somebody who's 80. And in the United States, if you're 80 and you're a man and you're white, right, they're actually lower for a lot of minorities. But if you're white and you're a man and you're 80 years old, you could expect to live to 87. And if you're a woman, your life expectancy from 80 is 89. So what that means is most people who make it to 80, they don't make it to 90. So people are dying in their 80s. Now, some of these people happened to catch the coronavirus, and then they also died. Now, I don't know how much they're checking for other variables as to would some of these people have died anyway. I mean, maybe the coronavirus accelerated their death by days, by weeks, by months. We don't know. But the fact that there's such a big disparity between people over 80 dying and anybody else, it tells you that the problem with the virus maybe is not the virus itself, but the fact that if you have other problems and you get the virus at the same time, that's the problem. And so it may be that even if you're over 80 and you're very healthy and you're in good shape, then you're probably okay. I think that the 80 plus year olds who are dying are pretty sick. They have other problems. And this is just, you know, the straw that breaks that camel's back. And so that's probably who has to worry, right? You probably, if you're in your 80s and you're in bad health, yeah, you know, you definitely shouldn't be traveling and you should definitely stay at home and order in and take all these precautions. But I think for everybody else, I think, you know, these NBA basketball players, people are worried, oh, they're going to touch the ball. These guys are in great shape. What's the odds that any of these NBA players who get the coronavirus are going to die? None of them are going to die. These are prime conditioned athletes, you know. Now, the stands, I mean, if I was older, you know, I wouldn't want to go to a basketball game if I was older and I had some problems, you know, knowing that there could be a coronavirus there and I might catch it. But again, all of this, we are overreacting most likely. Now, you could say, well, you know, better safe than sorry. Well, I mean, there's a degree. I think this thing is feeding on itself at this point, and it's just snowballing. right? And as some businesses closed, and there's pressure on more businesses to close, and then the president declares a state of emergency, and all this thing is happening, we're just ginning up all this fear. We're just doing it to ourselves and stirring us up into a frenzy. But, you know, maybe this could be just an excuse, right? We could say, well, you know, the only reason that the economy is back in recession, the only reason that QE is happening is because of the coronavirus. And like, but for the coronavirus, everything would be great. See, I don't buy that at all. If it wasn't the coronavirus, it would have been something else. Look, the Fed called off the rate hikes long before the coronavirus. The collapse in 2018 happened before the coronavirus, right? So that already happened. The Fed had already started cutting interest rates. The blow up in the repo market and really the beginning of QE4, all of that happened before the coronavirus. So anybody who wants to say, hey, Peter, yes, you predicted the Fed would go back to zero and you predicted QE, but you got lucky because it only happened because of the coronavirus. Coronavirus is the pin. There was going to be a pin. Every bubble finds a pin. It's just a question of which one. But whether this coronavirus crisis ends up being a real crisis or a manufactured crisis, the one thing I know for certain is our federal government is not going to let this crisis go to waste. Neither Congress nor President Trump is going to waste one bit of it, especially in an election year. And especially an election year that's going to include a recession and a bear market. So in other words, it's going to be a bipartisan spending orgy, right? We're going to pass all these special programs, spending programs that the Democrats want because the Republicans are going to sign on to them. And we're going to get tax cuts that the Republicans want because the Democrats want to sign on to it. Nobody wants to say no to anything, right? There's no program that we can't afford. Why? Because we have the Fed, right? We have Jerome Powell, who has the largest quantitative easing program ever imagined. You know, what we're going to actually do is run an experiment in modern monetary theory. Now, we don't actually have to experiment in it because they've tried this in many nations and it's always failed. But we're going to do it again. We're going to crank up the printing presses because everybody believes that deficits don't matter and we can have something for nothing. So we're going to print so much money, right? Our quantitative easing program is going to be so huge that it would even make Mugabe blush.